Still trying to catch my breath. I'm coming from strategy. I try my best to be number one in the strategy. He refused to respect. Okay. So I had to be number two. Everybody was rushing for his or her only team. Once again, welcoming honorable members, but in particular, let me welcome our minister for the first time to this committee, and also our deputy minister, obviously, who's already been part of the Spanish House, Barbara. Sister, you came at a time where things were not so hectic, but obviously, as you would know, this is a very, very intensive and hectic committee. Today, we were going to look at two areas, other than internal issues, such as minutes and reports. The aim is just to look at the restructuring of the energy sector. More so, just to get an overview of what could be included or could be issues in the restructuring of the energy sector, and also the trigger points that have caused that. If you remember, members, when we were dealing with the ESO bill, that's where the issue of the need of restructuring of the energy sector was missed. No, sorry. Apologies. I don't think we should have said energy sector. We should have said electricity sector. The focus there is the electricity sector, not energy sector, because it's too broad a topic for now. But obviously, since this is a debut, we shouldn't be stressing much, because all we're trying to do is to trigger a journey, which obviously would end up as looking at the energy sector as a whole. The other area is the integrated energy plan, local-oriented energy plan. Particularly that there has been tremendous pressure on both the department and committee to address the subset of the integrated energy plan, which is the integrated resource plan. I think it's appropriate that we talk a little bit about it. Without wasting any time, let me hand over to both the minister and the department. Oh, sorry. I was rushing for to catch up with time. Can we get apologies first before we go into...
Thank you, Chair. So following the apologies, honorable titles, unable to attend due to personal commitments, as well as Bema Tibela. Then Honourable Smala as well, constituency commitments, and then Mr. Ferguson just indicated that she need to leave at around 11, say, to attend the Portfolio Committee of Environmental Affairs. And then Honourable Sela and Honourable Fadebe will be joining us later, Chair. Those are the reports. Thanks, Chair.
Oh. Welcome, Honourable Fadebe, even before you sit. I hope you've left Mbumalanga intact. okay. All members, shall I hand over now to the department? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I would like to thank you for the opportunity that you have afforded us. I am accompanied by the Deputy Minister of Energy, the Director General, the DDG responsible, and other members of the Ministry and from the Department. I would like to make a few closing remarks before I hand over to them. I'm sure that the full house is not a welcoming committee. And I'm sure that I've not seen anyone saying fat cakes. There's obviously a very keen interest on your agenda items today. So we'd like to welcome all stakeholders. Stakeholders are very important. We have a responsibility for energy in this country. And all the stakeholders that have a role to play therein are obviously important. What we have done as the ministry since my appointment was to meet with all the entities that fall under the remit of energy, to understand what are the challenges, what are the problems, and how we can work closer together with them as the ministry, as the department, to mitigate those challenges. So we have started in-house, as it were, to meet with the various entities, and obviously we've also met with the people responsible for those entities within the department. After that, it's also important that we meet with our stakeholder groupings. The entities in the private sector that are involved in energy, there are various organizations, to meet with the leadership of those organizations. And similarly also to meet with labor, the trade unions involved in the sector. So that's the brief roster of events that we are busy with. So at the appropriate time, I'm sure that quite a number of people who are in this room, through their various affiliations and associations, will get better time in order to engage with them. I would also like to say that with specific reference to the portfolio committee, we obviously take our responsibility of at various stages reporting to the portfolio committee and engaging the portfolio committee. Energy. So we are saying that we would like to have this constructive but vibrant interaction where we table issues with the portfolio committee, engage and discuss those issues. As far as possible, I'll attend portfolio committees. As far as possible, the deputy minister would also attend portfolio committees. But the issue that I would like to leave, we won't be able to attend all portfolio committees. That's myself and the deputy minister. But when we are not attending, there are people who are called parliamentary liaison officers. So when they are here, we are also here. They represent us in the portfolio committee in order to keep a tab and handle on the issues that are raised here. So in the ministry, the person who is responsible for the liaison with the portfolio committee, the PLO, on my right is Ms. Kongile Talasile. Because the acronym is PLO, I call her Ms. Arafat. She represents me when I'm not here. And in a similar vein and fashion, the deputy minister is represented by Ashwin. By her. So when we are not here, they are here. They keep us informed. So this is how we'll move, interact, engage, debate, and move forward with the issues. For the proceedings of today, we are under the able leadership of the Director General of the Department, Ms. Maguban. I would like to hand over to you, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair President. Thank you, Minister. If I can just maybe introduce the thing quickly. Mr. Omdi Ahane is the Deputy Director General responsible for Energy Policy and Planning. And Mr. Chili Zamwe-Buti, responsible for Energy Planning. And of course, I've got Dr. Philip Kwan, also responsible for Energy Modeling. Chair President, I would like to hand over to Mr. Ahane.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Minister and Deputy Minister of the Department of Energy, Honourable Portfolio Committee Members. We will be doing a presentation. With your permission, Chair, the first presentation is on the restructuring of the energy sector. If we can perhaps just indicate a few points about that, starting with the legislative framework. As you well are aware, the department has embarked on a process of introducing revised legislation relating to the energy sector, including the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill, the National Energy Regulator Amendment Bill, the Independent System and Market Operator Bill, and very soon the Gas Amendment Bill. Part of the rationale is to streamline the industry in a manner that would help us to achieve certain objectives that have been set by government in the main relating to energy security within those different sectors. What you will also see today is a presentation that seeks to demonstrate the processes that are going to follow around the planning in the context of the uncertainty that we face, pursuant to the objectives that have been set. This planning process is, Chair, you have pointed out, takes our planning scope further than just the electricity phase, where we have already developed the integrated resource plan, and we now are going to cover all the primary energy options that we have available as country in an integrated plan that we call the IEP, the Integrated Energy Plan. Part of our plan this year is to incorporate an updated integrated resource plan, a gas infrastructure plan, the liquid fuels master plan, the transmission development plan, and some major distribution infrastructure into one national plan. We also project our energy demand in the period up to 2050 in a manner that allows us to determine for the first time how to best meet that demand, as opposed to trying to chase after electricity demand without due consideration of the other options that might be better. Where we are at the same time as doing this legislative and planning process is we are also implementing part of the elements of these plans in the electricity space. The Minister of Energy has made certain determinations under the section, the relevant sections of the Electricity Regulation Act, and capital programs are underway, including, as you are aware, Medupi Kusile Ngula and the renewable energy IPP program. So at the same time as planning and implementing, we encounter certain problems, and part of the challenges that we therefore need to address indicate that we have to do certain structural changes to our industry. What we have proposed is to do this in a phased approach, in other words, in a manner that does not seek to prescribe what you could call an end state tomorrow, but rather, given the extent of the problems that we have to deal with, to phase it in. Financing of our capital program is a big consideration, and as you are aware, we have just started the first year of the multi-year price determination in the electricity space, which would then be extended in a period up to 2050, so as to provide certainty around what our appetite for tariff or electricity tariff increases will be in the future. Because based on that, the best delivery mechanism institutionally and structurally would then be put in place in order to address those challenges that relate to the implementation of the program. So, Chair, in a nutshell, the restructuring of the energy sector as per the first item on the agenda is a phased process that entails the planning aspect, the revamp of the legislation, but at the same time dealing with the challenges including financing that would then determine what we believe would define the structure of the industry. If I can perhaps just leave it at that for a comment, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sofane. Any questions from the committee, from our members? Mr. Banner, there are no questions for now. Thank you very much. Of course, as you have indicated, myself, this is the beginning of a journey, but this is an expression that from our side really would like to see an evolution of the strategy and the program where would like, whereby the department would be leading the sector, or to say the role of government, in the term of restructuring of the electricity sector. Taking into account that also we have the municipalities playing a role as they are constitutionally directed to do so. But this is an area that really needs attention more than ever before. Thank you very much for now. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The next presentation is on the integrated energy planning. And Chair, we have a slide presentation that will perhaps take about 40 to 60 minutes. And if I can perhaps ask sorry about that, Chair. If I can just also indicate that we will be sharing the presentation. My colleague, Ms. Chili Tamwidisi, will be doing the bulk of the presentation. But just to kickstart this, to indicate that the presentation is on the Integrated Energy Planning Report. It does not purport to be about the Integrated Energy Plan itself. The energy plan would be produced after a process of stakeholder engagement, which will start on the 19th of this coming month, in about 3 weeks time, in about 4 weeks time, 3 weeks time. And once we have consolidated all the stakeholder inputs, we would be able to synthesize them into a report which will then formulate out of the what we can refer to as plan. It is not a plan that will be cast in stone, as indicated before. It would be updated from time to time. So if I can perhaps also take the opportunity with your permission, Chair, to indicate that we will welcome another invitation to come to the committee to provide feedback around how far we have progressed with the stakeholder engagement process once we have done that. Perhaps to also address one other question that I know lingers in this room. As I indicated, this process of stakeholder engagement will also address the update on the integrated resource plan in a manner that would integrate it into the umbrella plan for the country, the integrated energy plan. The criticisms in the past related to the fact that we had presented an electricity plan, but we had not been able to address a global plan, and I think, you know, for the first time South Africa is able to do that today. So with the introduction, if I can perhaps, with your permission, Chair, hand over to my colleague to take us through the detail of the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister,
if you have some empty chairs, yes, you could take me the top. Can they use this chair?
Well, we have to improvise. Mukoro, can we just take a few minutes? Can I plead with the honourable members to move closer to the front so that the empty chairs can be available as down the other side? Wait for this just a few minutes.
As for the oldest and so that your stakeholders can be comfortable. The more uncomfortable as the more uncomfortable they are going to make you.
Comrade Ben, ever since we've been working together, trading industry, we've hardly changed. Okay, Koro. Sure.
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, and honourable members. Good morning. And as Mr. Apani has indicated, the draft integrated energy planning report was approved by Cabinet to be released for public consultation. It is currently in the public domain, and we will have an intensive stakeholder engagement and consultation on the report itself. And also just to emphasize the point that he made, that the report itself is not the final IEP, and through the stakeholder consultation process and the input that we would have obtained from there, that will enable us to actually go towards finalizing and making recommendations, which will culminate in an integrated energy plan. The focus of the presentation today it's really not so much on the content of the draft integrated energy planning report, which, as I've indicated, we will be having extensive consultation on that. But rather, it was informed by the key questions which were actually raised and presented to us. So the scope of the presentation really focuses on historical overview of energy planning, explaining the relationship between the National Energy Plan and various other plans, such as the National Development Plan, the New Growth Path, as well as other plans and policies within government. And we also touch on the legislative framework, also drawing on lessons from other countries as well, issues of institutional arrangements and also linkages with the IRP. So the presentation is actually informed by the questions which were raised when, or rather presented by the Committee on Energy. So if I can just then go through the next slide, starting with the historical overview of energy planning in South Africa and globally. That's at a very high level in terms of the time frame, but the new sort of landscape of the energy sector and the key objectives that the energy sector seeks to achieve were defined in the white paper on energy policy, which was developed in 1998. That policy was very forward-looking in its time, and most of the policy statements announcing that policy have actually informed the energy sector, and various other plans and policies have been developed in line with achieving the objective of that particular policy. And then in 2003, the first integrated energy plan was actually developed, and the integrated energy plan was actually one of those elements which were identified as being critical for the energy sector already in the white paper. And then moving forward to 2007, we had the two energy security master plans, one for electricity and one for liquid fuel, which seek to provide for long-term energy security planning for the two sectors respectively. And in 2008, we had the National Energy Act, which talked about the National Energy, the Integrated Energy Plan as one of the key elements or outputs that the Minister of Energy must actually develop to inform the future landscape of the energy sector. And then we had the regulation on the IRP developed in 2009, which basically placed the development of the National Integrated Resource Plan with the Department of Energy. And subsequent to that, we actually had an integrated resource plan 2010 developed. And now moving on to 2013-14, we're actually in the process of finalizing the integrated energy plan. And then just maybe then going into more detail into those elements that I've highlighted in the first slide there. The Energy White Paper already identified that the integrated energy planning was critical for South Africa. So this is basically not a new paradigm for South Africa, and something that has been already in our policies for more than 20 years. Also, more importantly, emphasized that the integrated energy planning approach was actually start with focusing on demand. And this actually allows for the multiple causal linkages and policy analysis to actually be developed. And it also recognizes that energy is not a commodity, so it's not an end good in itself, but rather energy needs to be viewed as an end good, which is actually consumed to achieve a particular end. So energy services is basically the focus or the way of thinking that the Energy White Paper already at that time was trying to get us to think about. And then also it highlighted that policy must facilitate optimal energy consumption and production to meet social needs. And then you talked about the fact that during the integrated energy planning process, not only should you look at security of supply, but the social elements and economic development elements, as well as the environmental elements of the economy need to consider. It also clearly highlighted that previously, planning or electricity planning had been very supply-side focused, and we needed to look at an integrated approach. We should look not only at supply-side options, but also at demand-side interventions as well, which is one of the key things that we're trying to also address through the planning process. And then we look at how the energy thing at a very high level was structured post the energy white paper, but prior to 2007, is that you had the integrated energy plan, which was the responsibility of the Department of Energy. And on the electricity sector, there was a two-tiered approach wherein you had the National Integrated Resource Plan, which was developed by NERSA. So basically, if I can just go at a high level, is that the integrated energy plan was basically an overarching energy sector plan, and we basically defined different scenarios for the energy sector based on the policy environment. It covered the full spectrum of energy, just as the same approach that we are looking at now. So it covered liquid fuel, electricity, renewable energy. It also looked at demand side interventions and energy efficiency target setting. And the last IEP was published in 2003. And out of that integrated energy plan, some of the policies within the department actually emanated from that. And some of them include the National Energy Efficiency Strategy and the Biofuel Strategy, which were actually subsequently developed. They were actually mentioned in the integrated energy plan of 2003. And when you look at the electricity sector as indicated, it's basically was a two-tiered approach where you have NERSA as the regulator in conjunction with the Department of Minerals and Energy at the time, to a certain extent, responsible for developing the National Integrated Resource Plan. Basically, the plan at that particular time focused more on electricity infrastructure planning, and it was used as a tool to help the regulator with licensing, effectively monitoring and implementing the licensing activities. And it was also intended to inform detailed investment planning found in the integrated strategic electricity plan. And at that time, ESCOM was actually responsible for the integrated strategic electricity plan, which was the company-specific long-term planning tool, which allowed ESCOM to meet and execute investment plans. On the liquid fuel side, there was no previously no centralized approach to energy planning, and individual companies basically developed their own plans based on their own supply and demand projections, basically to meet their own market needs and obviously to increase their own market share. So there was no coordinated effort necessarily from a government perspective, and planning was largely for commercial perspective. But at some point, for example, in 2005 and 2006, there were independent studies which were conducted by the Department of Energy to collect heat, to try and establish mechanisms to alleviate the supply constraints within the industry. However, this was not necessarily done as a plan, but it was more interventions which were led by the Department of Energy together with the oil industry. So some of the key drivers that we believe led to the change in paradigm of saying that we have this energy white paper, we have these different entities responsible for planning in the various sectors. And there was also an energy crisis during that particular time. For example, there were the liquid fuel shortages in 2005, which had led to a significant dent in the economy as a result of those shortages. And then you also had electricity supply disruptions of 2006 and also in early 2008. And this also highlighted the fact that the disparate plans that were actually being developed by the various entities created for potential and contradictory initiatives and activities, and there was not necessarily any coordination from a government perspective to try to address the security of supply constraints. So then there was a need to then develop a numbers-driven or fact-based energy plans, and also, more importantly, analytical tools to evaluate proposed energy policies. And this was important such that for the entire sector, there could be a common view of what are the facts, what are the what is the demand for the different energy carriers going forward, and what is the current supply, what are the supply constraints, and what are the future supply options that actually need to be considered on a global scale rather than being done in Hawkins, and also with the various pens not necessarily talking to each other. So to this stage, in 2007, we then had the Energy Security Master Plan developed. Now, we had one master plan which focused solely on electricity, security of supply issues, and the other one focused on liquid fuel supply issues. So there were still two separate plans. However, they were done with the objective of ensuring total energy security for the country. So while they addressed the issues of security of supply individually, there were still gaps in the sense that the integration points or the overlaps between the two electricity and liquid fuels were actually not addressed. And if I can just give some examples of that, for example, the issue of diesel required by peaking plants, and that was actually not considered as part of the energy security master planning for liquid fuels, and it's something that had to be factored in at a later point in time during implementation. Issues such as LPG as a potential energy carrier to help with alleviating of electricity supply constraints was also not considered in the energy security master plan for electricity. So there are lots of integration points which are not necessarily addressed, because as much as you are addressing electricity supply and liquid fuel supply, you need to look at the entire energy sector in its entirety to get an appreciation of the key dependencies and the interlinkages between the different carriers. And then if I go to this particular slide here, I've just indicated here what then subsequently happened after 2007. We then had the integrated resource plan, which I've mentioned was promulgated in 2011. And then we had the liquid fuel 20-year liquid fuel roadmap, which is currently being developed within the department. And then the gas infrastructure plan is to be developed in future. And all of these basically are components of the integrated resource plan. And the idea is really that in the long term, we will move towards an integrated energy plan which looks at all of these various components separately. And I think also in the way in which the department is going has gone through a restructuring process, we have energy planning and policy now residing within a single branch, which allows closer integration, whereas previously electricity was in a separate branch, liquid fuels and gas issues were in a separate branch. Therefore, although efforts were there to actually try and determine, I think there were practical challenges with regards to that, but I think the consolidation will also help us going forward in more better coordination in this particular area. And one of the questions which I was also asked in the brief that was sent to us was to just highlight some of the energy planning which has happened in other countries. So during the initial stages of our planning process, we did some few sort of desktop studies, and in 2006-07, there was also a study tour which was undertaken to the United States and Norway to understand planning processes there. But in terms of the IEA, this was basically informed by a desktop study which relied heavily on various reports which were developed by the IEA on IEA member countries, basically looking at different plan approaches within those countries. So the study basically focused on countries such as Australia, Belgium, Canada, and some of the European countries and Nordic countries, as you can see there. And then what we basically found from that analysis, from that study, was that there was special focus on the use of long-term scenarios and forecasting for climate change and policy development and planning. And then basically many IEA member countries use energy forecasts and scenarios. Although there are some differences as to how these are applied, there are also differences in time horizons of some of these plans. Some countries look at 5-year plans, some countries look at 10-year plans, more seem to look at 20-year plans, with very few of them looking at 30 years and longer. And another key element that actually came out from that analysis report is the fact that planning within these countries moves from the view of solely focusing on issues of energy security and moving to the elements of the three E's, which were defined as energy security, economic development, and environmental issues. So basically, in the IEA member countries, the issue of having a strong focus on energy security really started in the late 70s, where the different ministers of the various countries basically looked at the world prospects of energy demand and supply, and also the need for the member countries to focus on managing the risk of supply disruptions, with a strong focus on global supply of oil at that particular point in time. So initial planning basically focused really on forecast of trying to understand what demand is going to be going forward and the potential risks that can emanate, and then ensuring that they put mechanisms to ensure that they have sufficient supply in the case of supply disruptions, which is actually one of the elements that led to them having to look at issues of strategic storage, the strategic stocks, to ensure that they had a sufficient reserve in the case of unanticipated disruptions. But through time, over and above energy security, environmental issues and climate change then started to take center stage. And also, as energy consumption and carbon emissions are intricately linked, long-term energy policy development has, over the last decade and longer, often been conducted with long-term climate change policy in mind. And in some of the countries, you actually find the ministries of energy being combined with the ministries of climate change or environment. In some of the countries, it's not separate ministries, but it's them in single ministries, because those issues need to be looked at quite closely. And I think even if you look at ourselves in South Africa, and you look at the contribution of energy sector to emissions, South Africa contributes about, the electricity sector and the liquid fuel sector contribute almost 50% towards total national emissions. So these are some of the elements that actually led to the paradigm shift from just solely looking at energy security, but also taking into consideration environmental factors and also economic development. Another key element that we also looked at is scenario planning, or the use of scenario-based tools as a mechanism for long-term planning. Initially, the forecast would really look at one outlook of the future. There would be one to be a predictive approach, where given the current understanding of the market and what it would look like, a single forecast would be made of the future. And planning to ensure security of supply would actually be centered around that. But it became clear that this was no longer really adequate, because there were many factors beyond the control of individual member countries which actually could influence the future market forces and hence the future demand. And it was then the move to move away from just using singular forecasts to looking at alternative scenarios of the future and putting in place options which could actually address those different pathways. And this allowed the different member countries to then adjust their plans accordingly as the future was unfolding in different ways. And then although planning still happens at individual country level and in certain cases at regional level in terms of countries which are interconnected, the IEA itself, just to illustrate this, also publishes an analysis of energy supply and demand in the medium and long term in the World Energy Outlook, which actually looks at different scenarios. They look at a business as usual scenario, based scenario, and they would also look at a scenario where you have significant policy impact. For example, they would look at a scenario where the global economy has policies that focus strongly on climate change, as an example, versus a scenario where some countries do not actually take the change issues going forward. And the reason for that is because no one can actually predict what different countries will do, but you need to understand and analyze the impact of what the impact of different causes of action would actually have. And then now focusing specifically on case studies, as I indicated, there was the study tour to Norway and US which was conducted. And starting with Norway, in Norway the national planning is really focused mainly on the electricity sector. Now this is done by, this is the responsibility of the Ministry of Petroleum and Energy, and it's basically coordinated by the Norwegian Water Resource and Energy Directorate. I think the interesting thing with Norway is that the Energy Department is combined with Water Resources because a significant portion of the electricity is from hydro. So for this, energy and water are very closely interlinked. Energy planning in the country is decentralized and it occurs at different levels. Basically, individual companies are responsible for their plans. Individual plans are set at a particular area or region. And then basically then the local authorities are then responsible for coordination or consolidation of those plans. And then this in turn influences or informs regional planning, which is ultimately also again informs or provides inputs towards planning at a national level. And the responsibility of the NDE is really the central assessments and coordination of the plans. And they do have various modeling tools. At a time, I remember I think they were using Macau and to a certain extent LEAP, but at a very high level. So the plan was not necessarily top-down, but in terms of then assessing the individual plans that have been submitted, they would use their model to do comparisons and this could provide feedback on that perspective. In terms of then the legislative framework, which actually informs that, they have the Energy Act, and that act basically regulates Norway's power system, and it also sort of guides the mechanism for issuing licenses for the entire electricity sector. And it is not only licenses for building new power plants, but it also talks about power line construction and local area operations, as well as district heating as well. And they also have regulations relating to energy planning, and this also provides more for power systems planning and again more emphasis on the licensing activities as well. And then it also indicates or provides guidelines on the contents that must be included in the different national and regional plans. So the contents of the plan are supposed to assist with a centralized way of being able to assess the plans. They indicate the types of content that must be included in each of the plans. And also specifies the different roles of the energy that the energy planning sort of players are actually assume. So then move on to the case study of the United States. The focus on energy security in the United States, one can say, was could have been informed and to a large extent by oil independence and overall energy security as one of the key drivers for long-term planning in the United States. And the form in which energy planning has taken place has evolved over the years, with the main emphasis being on collecting the relevant data required for energy planning. Now you have the Department of Energy of the United States, which is basically responsible for federal energy policy. And you have the Energy Information Administrator, which has been rendered the single federal government authority for energy information. However, it is independent from the Department of Energy and the rest of government. And energy planning is not centralized in the United States, and different states have different legislation as to how, you know, how they do the planning. But it's also a market-driven country, where it's the markets that basically or rather individual players in the market that are responsible for the individual planning. However, what's important there is that the Energy Information Administrator is responsible for actually collecting information and conducting analysis and providing advice to Congress, not necessarily informing the planning of new capacity or infrastructure development within the different states. So the important thing is that even the legislation that has been developed that have informed the IEA have really been centered around mechanisms of ensuring that the correct and relevant data is actually collected, which informs policy making and proper analysis and allows evidence-driven decision making rather than to actually enforce those decisions. And so basically the collection of energy information as well as its analysis and dissemination has been supported by comprehensive legislative provisions which have taken a number of years to develop. So this is not something which happened overnight. It has taken a number of years to develop, and different legislations have evolved through this time. But the main thrust has been to focus on issues which address supply side shocks and also ensuring energy security. And as I indicated, the information collected by the IEA is just primarily to facilitate public policy decision making as well as commercial decision making, but not to necessarily enforce it. And I think most of the stuff in this slide I've mentioned. I think you can move on to the next slide. And I think another important thing that the EIA has is that they do, from the different data that they collect, they conduct analysis and also provide different projections, energy demand projections for the entire country as well as global global sort of policy forecasts and reviews. But the important thing to highlight here is that in developing the different scenarios, they follow a policy, the starting point is they use a policy neutral approach to inform their reference scenarios. Basically, what their reference scenarios, they basically assume that only current policies and legislation are in place, and they would do a projection to understand what the supply and demand dynamics could look like in that particular instance. And then they would test the impact or implications of introducing different policies and how that would actually change the supply and demand dynamics. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with some of the reports. For example, they produce an annual energy outlook, which details annually revised projections for a period of about 20 to 25 years into the future. And then also on the request from Congress, they also compile specific requests as and when requested by Congress, which reports are venue to inform future energy policy and legislation within the country. So if I then just from that, just wrap up in terms of summarizing some of our conclusions from having looked at the two case studies and also the analysis of planning in the IEA member countries, is that industry structure, to a very large extent, determines the nature and role of publicly available information, as well as its use for in energy planning. And where an industry is monopolistic or oligopolistic, detailed information, including operations, investment plans, and costs, is used, but this is primarily to sort of level out the market and the playing field in the market to avoid dominance by individual organizations. And then in a competitive industry, it appears that information that's available normally tends to be focused more on prices and in certain instances market shares, and the private players or the market players generally then keep information that they deem as being commercially sensitive or allows them to get a competitive advantage over the competitors. That information is normally kept closely guarded by the players in a competitive market, unlike as opposed to a regulated sector. And another key conclusion that also identified is that there's no single prescribed or best suited method or process, for that matter,
have a long-term planning or developing long-term plans, and that different countries use different methodologies, and in most instances the choice of that methodology is informed by a number of factors. One of them is actually the data that is, and the level of data that is actually at the disposal of the planners at that particular point in time informs their approach. The purpose of the plan is also a key element which informs that. And also existing plan frameworks and systems and the legislation at that particular point in time also informs it. But also very importantly is the actual the market structure informs the approach to planning as well. As you can see, in one extreme, you have a totally open market where individuals provide their individual plans, and maybe the government plays only a coordinating role. But where markets are highly regulated, you would expect government to play a more active role in it. But the critical factor in each instance is to ensure that whatever methodology is followed and whatever approach is followed is actually well understood, it's transparent, and it's inclusive so that all players are actually aware and can understand what it does. And then our assessment is also that therefore structures and systems should also be put in place to ensure consistency and that whatever approach you have in place can actually be repeated and does not necessarily change, and that if it does change, there is a structured way of actually leading to that change, and there are clear goals which actually inform that change. And then also here we have, in South Africa we basically have the NG White Paper, which to a large extent talks about South Africa moving to a market driven industry where the liquefuel industry, for example, has limited government intervention and regulation. And then where the key policy challenge for government is to determine the appropriate level of involvement during the transition and to a rapidly globalizing and internationally competitive environment. So the Energy White Paper looks to a liquid fuel industry which is very liberated. However, at the same time, we also have the ruling party, which basically denounced South Africa as a development state, which is, in a sense, is aligned with the transition phase as espoused in the Energy White Paper, which also stipulates that the state should maintain a strategic role in shaping the key sectors of the economy. That basically means intervening strategically to drive growth, development, and transformation of the structure of the economy. So while we want to move to open markets, I think we also need to take cognizance of the fact of South Africa as a development state and the role that it needs to, or that government and centralized planning can still play in addressing some of those economic and social challenges. The next part of the presentation will focus on the interlinkages between the different plans, basically the national overarching plans, integrated energy plan, and other energy plans and policies within the Department of Energy. I must apologize, this being slow, but basically we're saying that energy planning does not happen in isolation. There are global factors which have an impact not only on the energy sector, but on at a national level in general. So even in the setting of national policies and objectives, such as the National Development Plan.
Yeah, let's just take a small break. Thank you.
does not happen in isolation, and there are many factors which have an impact and should be taken into consideration during the energy planning process. And at a national level, we have overarching national plans which they themselves need to respond to the global factors which we actually as a country do not have control over, and we also do not necessarily understand or know what form they will take. We might understand the range of directions in which these factors may actually turn out, but there's no certainty in terms of what they will actually look like. And South Africa, to a certain extent, the level of influence that as a country we could actually have on those shaping those factors could actually be minimal in certain instances. So basically, taking these global elements into consideration, the national planning at a national level, we believe then takes all these factors into consideration and basically informs the strategic direction of the country, the aspirations of the countries, and where the country should actually go. But planning at that level is not necessarily operational and is not meant for direct implementation, but rather implementation or sectoral focus and assessing the different implications or alternatives defining the different overarching plans is then the responsibility of sector plans. And examples of sector plans for us would be the IEP would be one, and the National Transport Master Plan, the climate change policy would also be a sectoral level plan, which is informed by higher level plans. So the role of the planners at the different levels is to ensure that all these elements are taken into consideration. So if you look at the objectives. Objective of subordinate plan should therefore obviously be aligned with the objectives of the higher plan. The assumptions, where the assumptions are overlapped, should also be informed by those. And then alternatives to those assumptions also need to be considered in the subordinate plans as well. The higher order plans also, in certain instances, present only aspirations. In certain instances, they also present policy alternatives that should be considered. And it's the role of the subordinate plans to explore those alternatives to actually then make final recommendations which then can be implemented. So the IEP as a subordinate plan, therefore we believe that in terms of then what has been stated in overarching plans such as the new growth path, the responsibility of the IEP is to basically assess to what extent can the energy sector contribute to that objective which has been espoused in the national growth path. To what extent can the energy sector contribute to the objectives that are defined in the National Development Plan as an example. And where the National Development Plan presents alternatives, the role of the Department of Energy through the Energy Plan is to explore different alternatives in more details and do analysis on that and basically make recommendations for the energy sector going forward. And then if we move on to the next slide, as I've indicated here, there are different plans and which are informed by the sort of more overarching plans here, and some of these plans themselves have a high impact on the energy sector. So although the IEP takes cue or direction from higher level strategic policies or overarching national policies, in so doing it also needs to look at what is happening at a PR level, what's happening at a sectoral level. What is the national transport saying in terms of the future of transportation industry, and what impact does that have on future energy of rather liquid fuel demand? If they're looking at modal shifts from liquid fuels to looking to electric vehicles, what role does the energy sector need to play in ensuring that there will be sufficient supply to move towards that? And what implications does this have on building new capacity in the liquid fuel industry? National climate change, I think that one, as mentioned, climate change has a significant impact on the energy sector, as the energy sector being a key contributor to national emissions. The carbon tax policy, obviously, is that if carbon taxes are introduced, that has significant impacts on the energy sector. The water infrastructure and the fact that Africa is a water scarce country, the energy sector needs to respond to that. And in proposing future policy options or supply options, we need to be cognizant of water usage. And the beneficiation strategy also has impacts in two ways on the energy sector, very broadly speaking. Impacts in two ways, in the sense that increased beneficiation, we need to understand the impact that this has on future demand from the various economic sectors. So the energy sector basically acts as an enabler to the attainment of some of those objectives defined in the beneficiation strategy. And the second element is looking at the commodities themselves, which the beneficiation strategy says that need to be valued at, coal being one of them, which is also a fuel source for electricity generation. And it also looked at, the beneficiation strategy also, for example, looks at promoting platinum group minerals and also promotes or advocates, for example, more R&D and investment in fuel cells, which if development happens and technological developments mature and become successful, actually have an impact as an alternative supply source for the energy sector. So the IEP seeks to quantify and provide feedback and the extent to which policy objectives outside of the sector may impact on the energy sector and imperatives, and of course vice versa as well. And in being able to assess and understand all these policy impacts during the energy planning process, we actually have a governance structure which has different departments involved through a steering committee. And we have representatives from various government departments such as National Treasury, Environment, Mineral Resources, Transport, Human Settlements, Trade and Industry, Planning Commission, etc., to make sure that during the planning process we have actually taken all these elements into consideration and have not actually ignored them going forward. And then in terms of the scope of the IEP within the energy sector itself, is that it looks at the entire energy value chain, does not only focus on demand, does not only focus on supply, does not only focus on transformation, and it also looks at all energy carriers. So it does not only look at coal or crude oil or renewables, it looks at all energy commodities. So basically looking at the primary energy resources, it considers all of them, renewable fossil fuels and nuclear. And where possible, we also even look at the cost of actually extracting those minerals where we have the natural endowment. And if we don't, we also look at the cost of actually importing those commodities where we don't have our own natural endowment and the costs associated with that. In terms of then conversion technologies, we looked at power generation, and that considers your conventional coal plants, your nuclear, your diesel generators, your gas generators, as well as the different renewable energy technologies. And for fuel processing, we look at your conventional refineries, GTL and your CTL plants as well. And coal to liquid and gas to liquid as well. And so in terms of the secondary energy carriers, the primary ones that we've looked at is electricity and refined petroleum products. I think to this, at this stage, we have not necessarily looked at it because that is not necessarily a big element in South Africa in terms of national planning. And then we also looked at the different industrial sectors, and then also looked at different technologies and different energy services within the different sectors. So basically what this means is that when you look at the entire value chain and all the components, it obviously touches on all other energy policy as well. So as much as we work with other government departments to ensure that we have taken their policies into consideration, and in making recommendations or in evaluating different options, we've explored that and we have understood the bi-directional impact. We also need to look at our own individual energy policies. So in certain instances during the planning process, it may appear that what we're trying to do is a duplication of another policy development process, which is actually happening within the department. And then, but I think the important thing to highlight is that the IEP is aimed at bringing everything together. So basically, if I choose, for example, the development of let me pick an example. For example, if you look at the development of a renewable energy policy or a national energy efficiency. Okay, so for example, if I look at the national energy efficiency, development of the national energy efficiency strategy, for example, if we look at demand side interventions and different alternatives or targets for improving national energy efficiency going forward. But that is done in isolation. But during the IEP process, we will then want to understand if that energy efficiency strategy is implemented successfully, what is going to be the overall impact on energy, on electricity demand, for example. And then with that understanding, it then changes the supply options, which in turn also can have an influence on other sectors as well and demand for other sources as well. And to give you an example as well, as I mentioned earlier, when the energy security master plans for liquid fuels and electricity were developed, some of the interlinkages were not necessarily addressed. And in fact, if you use an example here, when you looked at different refineries during the times of the electricity supply shortages, in certain instances you had electricity supply disruptions into the refineries, not understanding that that is actually a critical element to the economy. And by having electricity supply disruptions there, you're actually having impact on your own sector, but in a different commodity. So during the integrated energy planning, we try to bring all those elements together. And it's also important to highlight that because we are not starting with a blank sheet of paper where there are no policies to start off with, we do have various policies that have actually already been developed. We need to use those policies as a starting point in informing our business case going forward and our assumptions. But the recommendations that will then emanate from the IEP process should inform possible reviews that need to be made in those individual energy sector policies. And one example that was mentioned is also the linkages with the review of the IRP. As far as possible, that the assumptions for that would have to be informed by the reviewed assumptions in the IEP as well. To the next
one. Okay. If I may, maybe just elaborate on the slide while she takes a voice break, struggling a little bit here. Just very quickly, this is actually a snippet out of the processes that we'll be following. Just firstly, to highlight, sorry, I apologize, we don't have a pointer here, but then try and navigate through this. Basically, we have an IEP here. If you like, this is what we would like to produce. It is influenced by a whole lot of inputs on this side, but it also influences those. In other words, that the IEP is a dynamic process. What we indicated before is that there would be various elements. You can just follow these channels, for example. The integrated resource plan is one of those channels. It's the electricity space. And then here we have the liquid fuels roadmap. That would be a different channel, and so on. LNG, LPG, natural gas. And then down here at the bottom, we're looking at what actual indications would be relative to what we have developed an instrument called the Pathways Calculator. Basically, we're saying, what does this indicate? For example, if we want to build 40,000 megawatts of wind in this country, how much special wind will this have? Does it mean that we have to cover the whole of the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape with, you know, a wind turbine and those kind of outputs, if you like? So ultimately, what you want to do is to integrate all of these chains here, other linkages between the different streams, if you like. So ultimately, they will converge at this point, if you like. There would also be if you like, the integration. This is what these letters integrate. So in other words, or indicate. In other words, you might have an IRP which talks to your climate change roadmap. So basically, it says that in your climate change roadmap, right, as you embark upon this climate change roadmap, what does this mean from an IRP perspective, based into, both in terms of what the IRP will impact your climate change roadmap, or in what way it will impact it, and in what way your climate change roadmap might be impacted by IRP and so on. So it's a vice versa kind of thing. But ultimately, we want to have electricity, liquid fuels, coal, gas, hydro, and so forth, converging into a supply-demand balance. And basically, the demand projection, if you like, is a different stream here. And the demand projection would also be influenced by what we do on the national energy efficiency side of things in order to get to this, if you like, this equation at the bottom, if I can call it that, where we say we now want to ensure into the future that South Africa is able to meet our energy supply and demand balance pursuant to certain objectives. And one of these, for example, would be the part that I related to about the climate change impact. And once we have got this kind of sense about what it means for us as a country, what we're not showing on the slide is the potential impacts, the macroeconomic, you know, the socioeconomic impacts of all of it. And then the feedback loop continues, if you like, in the next iteration and so on. So basically, this is the kind of the process that we'd like to put in place. The IRP, well advanced, the liquid fuels master plan underway, energy efficiency strategy, we had the consultation very recently, LNG, or shall we say the gas strategy under development, the pathways calculator under development in conjunction with our players.
Thanks, Mr. Hani. So I think we can move on to the next slide. That's essentially indicating that there's a feedback loop between the integrated energy plan and the review and development of other policies within the sector. And as we indicated, that one of the objectives of the IEP is to inform future energy sector policies as well as all guiding infrastructure investments. So the legislative, one of the other questions that came out is on the issue of the legislative framework. And the IEP itself, or the development of the IEP, is legislated in the National Energy Act of 2008. And the policy which guides infrastructure investment and development to ensure energy security in the country, amongst other factors. The Act does not provide the minister necessarily with any powers to enforce implementation of the recommendations in the IEP. And I suppose one can view this as a challenge that in the worst case can mean that it can be a policy document which is never installed into existing or future government policies and whose recommendations do not inform infrastructure investment. But we believe that statement would be a wrong statement in the fact that not all government policies have a legislation to ensure their implementation, and implementation is enabled through various government initiatives, such as the medium-term strategic framework, amongst others. So there are mechanisms to ensure that policies are implemented, because it's not always necessarily the department which actually develops that policy that is necessarily responsible for implementing all the elements of that particular policy. And in most instances, it lies in different areas. And the same is the same for the IEP or the energy sector, so to speak. You can skip that, another duplication. Sorry, that was apologize for that as a duplication. I think then if we just take you through the way forward at a very high level, the stakeholder engagement process that has taken to place is that we started off, or rather have had an inception public workshop in the form of Energy Planning Colloquium, which was held in 2012. At that workshop, we're still communicating the high level process, and what is the detailed process? No, it was not the high level process. It was actually the detailed process that we were going to undertake for the energy planning, and then we also indicated a high level approach, and also we even went into details in terms of the different models and the modeling tools and the different elements that will actually be looked at. And also had input from various industry experts and academics and other interested stakeholders who also provided input and shared information with us at that particular forum, which we actually have taken into consideration and used quite extensively during our planning process. And so from that, and combined with our intergovernmental forums, which have been taking place, they started taking place even before the energy plan colloquium, and they continue to take place periodically through combined forums, and in certain instances also bilaterally, where we've received input, reviewed our assumptions, and also received inputs from them as well. And we basically, this whole process culminated in the draft integrated energy planning report, which has been published for public consultation. So then the next step is to obtain further stakeholder input from the public again. And all of this has been considered and synthesized, so that will actually emanate in the integrated energy plan with actual recommendations for the energy sector. Just maybe then going through some of the very, very high level key elements in each instance, which is essentially just an extension of the previous slide, is that in the energy planning colloquium we had input on policy and socio-economic input that should be considered. We also had other planning considerations and input. We also got input on different technology options that we should consider and different energy modeling approaches. During our intergovernmental forums, focus was on policy and macroeconomic assumptions, further enhancing planning objectives, which emanated in the 8 planning objectives that we've identified. We also assessed various policies and identified the high impact policies which would inform our different evaluation of different policy options. Then we also looked at different energy supply technology options, not just for electricity sector, but also for liquid fuels and gas. And then the draft report, which has been published, basically presents the estimated future energy requirements in support of the macroeconomic and socioeconomic requirements. It also presents different energy supply options, which were informed by high-impact national policies and different assumptions about various technologies. And from this process, the stakeholder input that we then wish to obtain from the public is further input on policy and macroeconomic assumptions, additional policy and socioeconomic issues, and any other planning considerations which perhaps we have not necessarily looked at in depth. And the intergovernmental forums would then be convened again to consider all that input and basically review all the elements which were described previously, the economic assumptions, socioeconomic issues, and with the final objective of evaluating the different options which actually come out of that process and actually making final recommendations. And the final IEP report will therefore present not only the estimated future requirements, but will actually also present the recommended energy pathways of the energy sector, but also supported with detail on the socio-economic impacts and the macroeconomic implications, which the draft integrated energy planning report has not yet been provided. So with that, Chairperson and honourable members, that is going to be the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, Rea Pane, Ribbon Coloro. But
a complex situation. But obviously, I'm sure all members have got a string of questions around this. I also am itching a lot, because I thought they could have been a couple of other things, your models, the part of BRICS. Maybe if you could just share us whether you did pick up anything from our BRICS platform. But let me restrain myself and allow members first. Honorable Mloto, Honorable Failing, who else? That's all for now.
Thank you, sir. I basically have three questions. I just want to establish from the department, I know we are currently talking more of process issues, but I'm more interested in the trends that emerged from your consultation with various departments and agencies or institutions of government around future demand projections. By various sectors in the economy, the industrial sector, the residential, the agricultural sector, and the secondary sector. And also, I just want to establish from you whether you have picked up any trends in terms of demands for various energy carriers over the 40-year period of your modeling exercise. Chairperson, I just want to also establish, I just had a brief look at your draft plan, where it indicates, the reason why I'm asking that first question, in one of your draft plans, it shows over a 40-year period, energy demand within the industrial sector that is declining slightly, mining declining, agriculture staying static, and commerce staying static, residential staying static, and transport. There's an increase, but I'm more interested about the trends because I know the energy demand is the function of a lot of things, population growth, economic growth. So, but just give us a high-level indication of the trends. And secondly, I just want to find out from you whether from the trends that you have picked up, whether there's going to be any significant impact on the integrated resource plan. And also, are you picking up any trends that might have an impact on the choices of technologies that you have already made? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. As you said, this is a very complex document and very complex planning processes which we have to work through, and I thank you for the presentation. But, I try to cross my mind back to when we passed this legislation back in 2008 and what our intention was at the time. And one of your statements here is that the Energy Act does not provide the Minister of Energy any powers to enforce the implementation of the recommendations of the IEP. This is a key challenge which in the worst case can mean that the IEP can become a policy document which is never installed into existing or future government policies. I think that's a good entrance point to go into this, to discuss the kind of differences and what we actually intend with an IEP and how that is different from an IRP, say, for instance, or any of the other plans. My understanding, and I think having read through the document as well, or read through the 160 pages of this draft IEP that you brought up. one of my difficulties is that I see the IEP as the kind of broadest possible overview of the energy sector and the challenges that we'll have to face and the variables we'll have to deal with over the next 20 or even 50 years. That's ultimately what I would like to see an IEP become, is this kind of broad overview and of the difficulty that then presents for documents such as the IRP. So one of the things that I would like to really see in IEP is this issue of externality. And I think that one of the key problems is that we tend to simplify externalities to simply environmental externalities such as climate change, water. There are far greater externalities that have to inform the choices that we make around energy, both positive and negative externalities. And I think that needs to be teased out. Unfortunately, we just have a paucity of data when it comes to that. The only data that we have with regards to externalities is stuff that, for instance, is produced by Greenpeace that talks about the externalities of coal use in South Africa. Now, one can challenge that. But the point is that we need to have government data on this that can truly explore all of those particular issues so that we can then be informed when it comes to the IRP what assumptions must be input into that. So to me, the IRP is a kind of a blueprint. It's an overview, but it must directly inform the assumptions and policy imperatives that then go into the modeling exercises that the IRP then does. And that is what I'd like to see kind of come out of it from that. The other one that's critical to my mind is the issue of the elasticity of demand. I mean, a key problem in energy planning, I think one of the biggest problems, is this issue of how do we know what the demand will be in 20 years' time? And how do we then avoid lock-in, as in either if we've got a situation where we don't build enough and then we've got we don't have enough energy in the country, or we've got an instance where we've built too much and then we've got stranded assets and we have to then pay for that, and energy demand does not do that. So a key issue that we have to get right, and we haven't got right in the past, is this issue of demand, and part of what informs that as well is the elasticity of demand. And I haven't seen this fully explored within this current IEP. Have we fully understood what impact the price increases are going to have on demand going forward? Have we really started to tease that out? Have we even started to look at the difficulties of looking at what the elasticity of demand will be? These are the kinds of issues that I think we really need to tackle in IEP, because then we can get far greater assumptions that can then be fed back into the IRP and other documents to be able to see that. So, I mean, those, I think, are the major weaknesses that I'm picking up at the moment, and I'd be interested to hear how we can overcome that, because I think this is important. I mean, it's taken us 6 years to get to this point. I think this IEP is a very important document, but I want to see it be as comprehensive as possible in terms of providing those overviews and assumptions that can go into future planning documents further down the line in the future.
Thank you, Frailing. You just remind me of the debate during MY53 when we're challenging ESCOM on forecasting of demand. It's a very tricky thing. There is love. No proper landing.
Thanks, Chairman. Yes, I agree with my colleague that we have a process in hand that is very complicated that we need to go through. But the presentation does not give to me a sense of what we want to achieve. For instance, we look at the Norway model in slide number 16, which basically separates the generation from the distribution, since companies are at lower level, getting coordinated at local level, and the project starting from there, moving up. And the South African model currently, as it stands in the electricity, being that which you have one main generator, transmitter and distributor, mainly, and some other players playing a few. One does not get a sense from this document as to which direction we really want. It is a paper that begins to say, these are the studies, this is where we are, the kind of plan we want to cover must be able to make a plan that can sustain the security of supply and demand successfully. But we can only be able to come back with a plan once we have done the necessary consultation with all the key players. Quite obviously, when you get into an activity of this nature, you should be having a preferred option which you may be persuaded out of by the debate. Is there any particular such thinking within the department of what would be an ideal situation in terms of energy planning and regulation? The other area is the area of the petroleum sector. my view of the petroleum sector is that trust have been made, policies have been made to see them transforming, and there is less, if any, transformation going on in that area. And in terms of this planning, do we perhaps think of creating some kind of plan that can be able to enforce, without just making a charter, transformation into these areas? Because transformation is not an option, it is a must. We are expecting everyone in South Africa to adjust to transformation. The last question, Chairperson, is the question relating to the powers of the minister. I think slide number 30 says the Energy Act does not provide the Minister of Energy any powers to enforce the implementation of the recommendations of the IEP. And it is a key challenge. What is the intention to deal with that challenge? What is the plan to deal with that challenge? We cannot just look at it as a challenge and live with it because it becomes an obstacle also for us to achieve what we need. If there is the authority in the department is not able to act on recommendations relating to energy planning. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Two short ones. On your last slide, 34, you refer to the final IEP report. Are there any chanting a panel on his comments on the restructuring of the energy? He referred to a number of bills. I'm curious to understand the status of those. Thank you.
Not on Ember. So you should see, you shouldn't have made mention of the deals. Pungant.
Let's check. Chair, I'm trying to check also the original planning. What did you manage to plan in terms of the, you know, your original planning in terms of the subject? My understanding is that when you continue to make those plans, you must also think in terms of our neighborhood, in terms of the needs of these resources as well. Whether it be planned in terms of think around that issue of allocation of the region. Yes, thank you.
You stole my sand. Because yesterday I was debating with people on one another issue, but emphasizing the regional context, that the extent to which in South Africa, whilst it's important that we plan about our own, in the context of our own country, but how to integrate that, you know, in the regional standard context, because not so long in future we will get into the various levels, the customs union, the monetary union, and the whatever is being driven from the trade and industry context. So I'm quite keen as well. I think I'm looking at time as well. And in that context, let me just throw in my own question so that we can take a break. I think the last place, just as a precursor, if you remember when we were debating about this, I'm one of the people who stood firm, was not being an expert, who that said that didn't even have an idea that we must give the department enough time to process IEP. Because one could sense this is a very complex tool, if I can use the generic term. So in order to have the best of what we can do in our debut in energy planning through this tool, we need to have enough time. And of course, I could also sense that through the colloquium, when experts were articulating the various scenarios and models and all of that. But obviously also it shows the strength that we can unleash in terms of planning for our country
as it has been indicated there, that there's a reciprocal and a symmetric relation between the IEP and other planning tools, you know, within the whole transformation agenda in South Africa. And I trust and hope we all, not just the members of the department, but others who would hold hands to look into that, because it becomes more and more and more complex as we go down the line. I've got a couple of questions here. The first one is that what does the department mean by numbers-driven energy plan, and why numbers-driven? I thought the IEP would look at beyond that. And outside and related issue is that at some stage you would have to get from the government why they focus on gas infrastructure plan, infrastructure in particular. Does that mean exclusion of other components of gas? In fact, if you link this with what we are doing now, is that what impact or lack of impact would that have? Or are we saying that would be enough to have a catalytic effect? Because also in slide 28, reference is made to both LNG and LPG strategy. Well, I can only interpret that when you say strategy, you go broader than mere infrastructure. Of course, I understand the need for focusing very strongly on infrastructure in the gas sector. Actually, we should be smiling all the way had we done some work, all of us in South Africa, on infrastructure a couple of years earlier. That I can see. But please help me and guide me. I just have a feeling that I would love to hear infrastructure and other you know, components within the whole gas. Another very broad question is that I'll leave this one because I can't remember. I have to refer to a slide. It's striking that the in the US there seems to be a very strong focus on oil independence. And in your visit there, did they articulate what the rationale for emphasizing on oil independence? And who is the equivalent of the energy EIA, the Energy Information Administration here in South Africa? One cannot but really make the reference to access to information, particularly from competitive approach as well as an administrative environment. And once again, I trust and hope we will hold hands together and look into that in terms of data management. I use the term data management because in a number of instances when the department has been interacting with us, this issue of data management has come up very strongly. Data collection, data feedback, municipalities, all majors, question marks, you know, uneasiness, lack of information, uphills when the department wants information from certain quarters, the integrity and accuracy of that information. Voila, now we're trying to develop one of the most powerful planning instruments in the energy sector. And I think, you know, surely even others who are listening will see the reason why the Department of Energy in particular has been quite upfront about and even expressing its frustration for not getting, you know, information in time, and not just in time, but with integrity. Because there's no point in flooding the department with information. You know, you can have 1 terabyte of server to get that information, but it must have integrity so that it can be used for planning, for monitoring, and all those things.
I just wanted to, although you raised it, that, you know, you take into account what kind of an economic situation we'll have in the future, and even the developmental state, how it can direct that. But what's the department's view, given that we talk about a transforming economy? Doesn't that give us a little bit of a complex situation to handle? We want to extricate ourselves from this apartheid-based economic configuration that we have. Even if we are finishing 20 years, the reality is that we have not managed to transform this economy. Or is it what Rana Apane is saying, that one or another, even this tool, as it evolves and gets concluded, it will help to influence the transforming economy? Global linkages are fine. That is just a comment, because it comes with what the Honorable Khadija has said, the regional context, because I thought the department would emphasize that. Well, once again, I've already asked them to, what if there are any lessons from our BRICS partners. I will highlight China. China is quite good in planning. You can't run away from that. For those who have even been there, is there anything of relevance or similarity that we have picked up there? With regards to enabling legislation for implementation, I'm glad the department has raised that. And a very broad issue, you may not respond to it today, but it brings us to one thing, which I know in countries like the United States, it's a very important thing. At what level do we rate energy as a priority? Is it just by the by, something we think as hindsight went to overall planning? I think for now, we need to give them, the department's space to look at this whole avalanche of questions, and after a break, we come back and get a response from them. Honourable members, can we take
a couple of issues, and I will also request my team to assist me, so that's why I will really want them to be very careful what I address. I'm going to address Honorable Mloto's questions about the trends and the demand, and Honorable Professor Maya Tula on the time frame of bills. And I will also maybe touch a little bit on our BRICS partner. Chairperson, with regards to the trends that are emerging, what we have currently, or rather what we have done in the plan, was based on the projections that we obtained from National Treasury, based on their estimation of the GDP. But what we are also doing in parallel at the moment, we are looking at the scenarios, because that is what we need to be able to see, to check. The NDP has got a projection which is aspirational. National Treasury has got a GDP projection based on how the economy is performing right now, and then of course there is a reality of our economy as we speak. So, and our plan therefore is to be able to say what you have right now is just as one scenario. Now we need to make various scenarios, and then that will, which will indicate what is it, or what is going to be, what under various scenarios, what kind of policies are we going to come across? And then obviously we have to make an appropriate recommendation at the end of the day. So demand projections are very, very complex, like already Honorable Freiling has indicated. They're very complex and can only deal with energy projection, not as a single digit, but as various scenarios to say what kind of scenarios are going to have and how do we respond under various scenarios. That's how we intend dealing with the issue. In fact, we have a whole team at the moment that is looking at those energy pathways and also those energy pathways going forward, that what kind of scenarios can we expect. That's basically what we can indicate on the energy demand. So the rest of the questions will be going to bills. We have got three bills that are currently being developed. The first one is ISMO. Chairperson, my understanding, that one is back here at the committee. And we have the electricity regulation amendment bill. My understanding is that state law advisor has certified that, pre-certified that, and also similarly with the National Energy Regulation Amendment Bill. My understanding also is that that one is also with the state law advisor. So that's basically that we have. And then we've got the GAP Amendment Act. That one was still consulting with the public. We've done a number of workshops taking through everybody what are the issues that are contained, and we've received a number of comments. So that is going to be consolidated, and then we are hoping to take it in Adelaide, and then we're going to take it from there. We do not anticipate that the GAP Amendment Bill is going to be dealt with during this term, probably in the next administration. That one is going to probably be debated here in Parliament, because there's a lot of work which we believe that needs to be addressed in that piece of legislation.
Can you call it to this committee? When will be the certified bill come? Because we really need to do planning. Sorry to interrupt you. Remember, we've got the BRRR period coming, and when BRRR period comes, we like, I don't know what you can say. So you really need to indicate to us, because that, at the end of that bill, is definitely going to compete with the BRRR period. And the ISMO, you know. So if really you could indicate and commit to this committee, what's your guesstimate? I'm going to give you that letter, say guesstimate.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. I would have loved to guess if it was within my control, but now it's with the same advisor. So all I can do is to talk nicely to them and request that maybe in the next month or so they can bring it. But otherwise, it's not my process anymore.
Sure, I just wanted to find out when it was sent to the state law advisor, because, you know, at the beginning of this year, when we had a briefing by the department, we were declaring this year the year of electricity restructuring. We're supposed to be doing ISMO, and that's a problem that sits with Parliament, and we're trying to take that out. But the other one said that they were going to come to us in March this year so that we could then process it. So I just want to find out where the delay has been. Has it stuck with the state law advisor for 6 months, or is it a problem with the drafting of it then?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Through you. I think we have to outline the process. The one cabinet has approved the draft of the legislation. We go through a process described under the NEDLAC Act. And to answer the question directly about what happens, where the delay is on, is that it takes sometimes 6 months and more just to go through the stakeholder consultation processes within NEDLAC. Because if you do not do that, the state law advisor's position is very clear, they will not take it. So you have to produce a consolidated NEDLAC report to them before they would even, you know, pre-certify it and then send it. So, strictly speaking, we have some control over the NEDLAC processes, but in terms of getting civil society, labor, government, and business to agree on a report and that is a bit of a challenge. Once that has been done, the state advisor, we usually have like a week or two's kind of process, and that's why the dean is indicating that within the month or so we can be able to do that. But the NEDLAC process is unfortunately the one that takes some time.
Shall I commit to engage with state or law advisors, honorable member, and check exactly what's so the data in Africans, what can. Thank you. Back to the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for that intervention. The last part on the BRIC partners, Chairperson, when we were doing this evaluation, we actually also visited Brazil, and then, of course, we do have quite a number of engagements with China regarding their planning processes. I think what we are doing right now is more or less what China does in terms of their planning processes, because the state controls and it's driven by the state, with the state entities being the implementing agency. So having said that, Chairperson, what we have learned is that there is no easy fix. There is no one size fits all. So basically, one of the reasons why we are here and also going to be engaging with the public is to be saying, let's formulate our uniquely South African solution, because our situation is a bit unique. So that's basically what we are trying to do. We're trying to make sure that we come up with our own homegrown solution in this regard, because there are no readily available lessons that we can implement and transplant here.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will deal with some of the questions on the that were raised by the various members, and I'll ask my colleagues that are going to deal with the issue of elasticity of demand to highlight the progress or the plan that we have to actually address that. I'll start off with the issue which was raised about externalities, and this is the an issue which has come up time and again. It's actually quite a complex issue which requires various participation and input from various stakeholders. Externalities we're talking about range from impacts on health, impacts on environment, impacts on the ecosystem, and a whole host of other things, impacts on human beings. And I think this is one of those areas which spans over and above the Department of Energy. And I suppose in this instance we're talking about specifically energy-related externalities. And to be able to adequately obtain the relevant level of information and conduct the adequate analysis to be able to quantify the various externalities, we definitely need to have engagements with all the different parties. And I think Department of Health is one of the key ones. Because one of the key controversies with quantifying externalities is that it requires you to reduce things to numbers in order to have a comparative output. And what do you then put as the value of a human life, for example? So I think it's a complex process that I think we need to look at, but not only within the energy sector and within the IEP, but I think at a national level, this is something that actually needs to be considered. And as the energy sector, we can then be able to assess what are then the external impacts of energy supply options and energy different energy carriers. And it's really not an easy or simplistic thing to highlight, and I don't think we would like from a Department of Energy perspective to downplay it either. In terms of the process that we are going to take going forward, and why we are saying that let's engage with stakeholders before we make final recommendations. The thing is that we want, we've indicated, and even the National Energy Act promotes, that the IEP development process must be as transparent and as all-inclusive as possible. So getting stakeholder input before making final recommendations is actually essentially part of that process. And as the Department of Energy, we are not necessarily wanting to make specific recommendations before we've actually received all stakeholder inputs and actually duly considered those inputs. And actually, where relevant, refined and reviewed some of the assumptions that we have actually been made. Because the process to date, we had a colloquium last year, and the process to date has involved largely government departments with consultations with some industry experts as well providing input. However, we would actually want and prefer to have broader stakeholder input such that we actually have a policy adjusted recommendation which takes the various elements into consideration. In terms of to what extent the elements of transformation of the petroleum sector are taken into consideration in the IEP, the IEP would not directly or is not intended directly to deal with issues of transformation, because we believe that is actually a very detailed sector-specific element which requires focus within the industry to actually address issues of transformation, and it's an implementation level element. And to this effect, the department is actually recently actually reviewed the implications or the impact of the liquid fuels charter and the extent to which that had actually been implemented. And through that forum, the issue of transforming that particular sector are being dealt with within the department. But the IEP itself would not necessarily make recommendations in terms of or report on to what extent transformation within the industry is happening, because that requires detailed analysis and implementation of the charter and, where relevant, the review of that. In terms of regional planning and consideration, or rather specifically in terms of consideration of SADC or regional planning at SADC level, if you recall in the IRP that actually looked at regional options, specifically focusing on supply of hydropowered electricity, and that has actually been fed into the IEP as well. Now in the IEP as well, we also look at natural gas options, which at this particular stage of the process, we have not necessarily looked at where that natural gas is coming from, but we have taken natural gas and projections in terms of what natural gas prices could look like. And as a further in-depth analysis, we'll then look at different options of whether that will come in from Mozambique or other areas. And also bearing in mind that work which has been done by specific players within the industry, such as the sessionals and Asian trade engagements with different supply sources, us as national planners don't necessarily get involved in the particular detail of incorporating it, but we certainly do look at natural gas as a supply option and what impact it could have for the supply of electricity, direct uses of gas, and also gas to liquid kind of conversion. And also, I think I also want to highlight that there's also two ways of looking at regional planning. To what extent we've considered supply from outside the country in the IEP, and to what extent do we include other countries in the IEP. At this stage of the process, IEP is actually nationally focused in the sense that we're looking at energy security or supply and demand nationally. We have not yet, to a certain extent, at least as some of the European countries do it, looked at regional planning at that level. And perhaps that is something that we can acquire in the long term, but I think at this stage we need to focus on national planning and get it correct at that level. The other issue which was raised is that there's a strong, who is the equivalent of the EIA in South Africa? Basically, there isn't a direct relationship to that. And for those members who perhaps were here during the time in which the National Energy Act was passed, the very first draft bill which was presented to Cabinet, to Parliament at the time, actually looked at having a energy modelling agency. But given the number of state-owned entities and agencies which were established, that function was no longer actually established as a separate entity. And then the directive was actually given that we need to actually absorb that capability and develop the capability within government, because government needs to be responsible for energy planning and all the analysis and ownership of the data and analysis behind it. And to this effect, within the Energy Planning Chief Directorate, we actually have two directorates. One focuses specifically on energy data collection, management and dissemination, and the one focuses on energy modeling, basically focusing on energy demand modeling, and the other element focusing on energy supply modeling. And we also have a specialist in the form of a macroeconomy specialist, which allows us to understand or assess the macroeconomic impact of our plan. And as you may also be aware, the Department of Energy was established in 2009, and we have gone through a restructuring process which has actually seek to streamline the structure of the department to allow us to obtain certain to achieve certain objectives. So to that extent, in the capability in that regard, we are not at the stage yet where we can say we have the full capacity within the department. That is actually, we are still in the process of actually obtaining additional capacity to address that. So we are at a stage where we have certainly made a significant improvement in the internal capacity as far as improved compared to what it was in 2007 and 2008. However, we're not quite where we would like it to be. And I think just to add on what DG mentioned in terms of the BRICS partners, in terms of one of the key lessons learned from Brazil as an example, is that they also use, in one of the data things that one of the organizations is looking at for new electricity demand projections and power planning, they're actually considering, they have not implemented yet, but they're actually considering using the Human Development Index as a tool to measure what could electricity demand be in the future if the Human Development Index, which is a measure of the income level, poverty levels, and of the country could have an energy, also an electricity demand going forward. And for me, those are sort of some of the most specific elements that we can borrow on and learn from these different countries. But the important thing to highlight is that there is no one glove fits all, and they need to borrow on different countries what we believe is suitable and applicable to us. And the reason why I'm mentioning that particular one is that in terms of some of the socio-economic issues that Brazil is facing, some South Africa is facing similar issues as well. So looking at a particular index such as that to assess the impact that it could have on energy demand forward could be something that we could apply in the future, which we have not necessarily applied at this stage. What do you mean by a numbers-driven IEP? What we're really saying there is we're saying it's an fact-based or an evidence-based IEP. And the reason for that is that we're saying that what is important in national planning is to make sure that we are all starting on the same base. It does not help for us to make assumptions on which there is no evidence to support them and on which other entities or organizations can make different assumptions. We need to also have the start from the same drawing board and agree on what the facts are, and from there actually start our planning process. And those facts are normally informed by information and data which is actually gathered about the sector and consolidated and agreed upon and then projected going forward. Now that does not mean necessarily then that the outcome that you get from the number crunching is what you then recommend, which is why we often talk about the policy adjusted IED going forward. And the purpose of the one, I suppose, intergovernmental consultation is to get policy inputs into it, which influence our interpretation of some of those numbers, and also we're taking into consideration input that will have been obtained from various stakeholders as well. We take into consideration social issues as well that need to be considered. So although the numbers driven is important as a starting point for fact base, we need to also consider other elements which ultimately lead to the policy adjustment, which takes into consideration what I suppose so-called softer issues into consideration. I'll head over to my colleague just to deal with the issue of the demand elasticity, and then
Thank you, Chair. When it comes to the elasticity of demand, there's three things that can happen that we need to consider in the IEP. First of all, there could be fuel switching if you change the price of one commodity and you don't change the price of another one. So that's an aspect of the elasticity. Another one is improvements in technologies, so energy efficiency. So you could have petrol that's used by a conventional car and a hybrid vehicle. So there's a way that people adapt to change in price. Of course, the third one is that they reduce their demand. In terms of the IP, we deal with the first two, which is energy switching and improvement technology. The third one, you don't accommodate directly yet. We're in discussions with Treasury in terms of the modeling they do and to see how we can interact and how our two models can interact with each other in dealing with that.
Chair, if I can address some of the other questions, starting with the one about whether this plan will have an impact on the technology choices already made in the IRP. So what we're saying is that the policy adjusted IRP and the demand projection that was assumed at that time are being updated as part of this process. Those, and if you like, Section 34 determinations that have been made will not change. Those policy choices pursuant to the objectives that have been set by government will not change. What is likely to change are issues that relate to the timing of some of those choices that are indicated as far as this is concerned. Insofar as the concern that the Energy Act does not provide the Minister with specific power, if I can take you back to the slide and indicate that, if I can find it quickly, and indicate that actually what we have here are different sectors. So basically, the energy plan operates globally at this level, but if you look at the inputs, if you like, and the things that we're trying to integrate are different sectors. For example, there is specific legislation that deals with electricity in respect of which the Minister of Energy is empowered to do certain things. So notwithstanding that there might not be any particular instrument that enforces the IDP at this level here and at the different other levels, the gas space, the petroleum space and so on, the Minister is still empowered to intervene and as such we do not see it as being a specific, you know, oversight in the way that it has been conceived. Just in respect of the question about avoiding a lock-in scenario where we might build too much, to also indicate that particularly in the electricity space, I think that's where the question is coming from, is that the integrated resource plan as it stands already provides for options like distributed generation. And in fact, within the renewable energy space, we've seen for the first time sub-utility options rather than big lumpy generators that make more flexible to, you know, to time, you know, our capital investment program to avoid overcapacity and so on. But having said that, also indicate that, you know, it's rather on the side of too much capacity than no capacity. It's actually cheaper to build more. And so if there's a table that we have to choose, it's the one where we slightly go more. And I'm not suggesting that that's the way that we want to deal with it. There was a question around what we are trying to achieve, and I thought the last slide actually did summarize what we're doing here. Basically we're saying there will be a final IEP report which then indicates our estimated future energy requirements. Right? So the IEP, I mean, we refer to it as a plan. It is actually a number of pathways that we put. So it's almost like, if this happens, this is what we're going to do. If that happens, and so on. What we then might want to do is to recommend a specific pathway. A specific pathway. Right? So that's where we're taking this. We want to recommend a specific pathway. And I think Michael, you gave an example, for example, around the electric vehicles in the future to the extent that improves our balance of payments, don't have to import as much diesel and so on. So that is something that we aspire to. I mean, the DG also talks to that. It's something that we aspire to work, and based on that aspiration, we test what the implications thereof could be, and therefore we might make certain policy interventions in order to direct our growth in that regard, in that direction. So the socioeconomic implications, macroeconomic implications would then guide us out. So this is the question about what do we seek to achieve with this IEP? And then once we have that picture, we can then go into the sectoral plans. Where is it? Into the sectoral plans themselves, and then having regard to those interactions and interdependencies, for example, we might not build as many power stations, because guess what, we might be transferring some of that load into the gas space and so forth. If I move on to the question around the preferred option for the department, therefore, it means that we're not there yet. We're not at that point where we're saying this is a recommended pathway and therefore this is the way that we believe that we need to take this process. Just in terms of the question around why we're focusing on, I think I didn't touch on it, again, why infrastructure? It's not about infrastructure, as you can see. Some of the elements here are infrastructural plans, with my cursor here. The infrastructural plans, but for example, others are actually policy, inputs. We have, for example, this is a national gas strategy specifically, not a plan as such, and I think it also addresses the other side of our regional integration. I think my colleague has dealt with that, where we might look at how do we take advantage of shale gas in the long term, in the future, but also our own interconnection with Mozambican pipe gas and so on. So it is not necessarily that we're looking at infrastructure, it's policy as it influences infrastructure and so forth. There was a question around the paucity of data and how we address the challenge. A number of issues here. We have already indicated that there is a center within the department that focuses on the collection of data, but it's a very serious challenge. I think it was last year already, we promulgated regulations around mandatory data provision. Earlier on, my colleague indicated the challenge that we face is the fact that in certain segments of the energy industry, data is very valuable, and releasing into the public domain is a serious problem. And for the first time, we're saying share this and the other, and it becomes a bit of an issue. But in his receiving election, we do have those regulations specifically to certain data requirements and so on, and it is something that we explore. But there is a very collaborative effort to make sure that the IEP does the take shape. There was also a question around the rationale for oil independence in the US, and it's basically, I suppose, an energy security consideration. In other words, where you are dependent, for example, in our case, where we are dependent on coal, it's a finite resource, and I don't mean to be controversial, but South Africa in the sub-region could take advantage of complementary resources. There's lots of water in Mozambique, the DRC, hydropower potential. So we need to be able to integrate, and I think it talks to the question, Chair, that you asked about how we deal with the what is the regional element in it, while focusing on our own. And I'm not speaking for the U.S., I'm only, assuming that it is the same driver, which is trying to seek energy security. And if you have the resource, yourself, and you can move away from, for example, oil and go into something that is more sustainable, you want to do that. I think the question around the time frame, DG, you have touched on that. I think we've covered all questions.
Thank you very much. Follow-up, honourable members, honourable failing.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I have a couple of other questions. The one question I have, I've said this before, we're liable too much and too little. Now, sure, I would agree with that to a certain extent. Except building too much does bring with it its own particular problems. And one of those problems is, of course, higher energy prices. Because what we commit to build, we have to pay for, and we have to pay for in terms of the current model, in terms of current energy prices having to go up. Now, what that also could then lead to is, in fact, the demand for energy going down. And I would say another cause of the elasticity of demand is also companies deciding whether to expand their operations in South Africa or not. That's what the price of electricity ultimately dictates to in terms of the structure of our economy going forward. So clearly we have to get the elasticity of demand right. We have to get that modeling process right. And I'm just interested to know whether the costing model has in fact been done for the nuclear build program and whether that has been then fed into IEP and we've been able to see what that particular energy price increase in order to pay for that, what effect that would then have on demand going forward. Because we need to get that equation right if we can proceed with that. I also saw that, Afi's also mentioned that it could affect the timing of our decisions around that. I mean, clearly we've seen the ERC study come out, which I know has been dismissed by the department. But I mean, what it does tend to say there is that in fact that decision over the nuclear build program doesn't need to be taken now. It should only be looked at in about 2017-2018. Do you agree with that assessment? Is that what the IEP is throwing up as well? Or what is it that's throwing up in terms of timing around these decisions? I'll be interested to hear on that front. Then just to the issue of the externalities, you know, I mean, I'm just going through the legislation that's informed this integrated energy plan. One of the things that it does say here very, very explicitly, it says that development of an integrated energy plan must take into account A, sustainable development, B, optimal use of indigenous and regional energy resources, C, balance between supply and demand, D, economic viability, and E, environmental health, safety, and socio-economic impacts, and F, developmental requirements of the Southern African region. Now, it's explicitly stated in this piece of legislation which informs the IEP that we have to take these impacts into account. Unfortunately, I'm not seeing that come through in this IEP, and I brought this argument of externalities up before. In fact, about 2 years ago, I brought this issue. And the same response came forward, that, well, it's not really the Department of Energy's responsibility to do that. I can buy that argument to a certain extent, but it is your responsibility to identify this as a gap in energy planning and to start to put pressure on other departments to come up with that information. Because how can we have a true picture of where we should be going with regards to energy if we do not have a full picture of what the costs and benefits of different technologies will bring to our society and our economy as a whole? That's the big picture that we need, and that's what the IEP has to do. And so I would hope that at the very least, the first iteration of the IEP, we identify it as a major gap and actually start to prod other departments to come up with the information so that we can then inform future planning processes in a far more comprehensive way. Because I think without it, we can't get a true picture of where we need to go in as a country in the energy space. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm going back to my question, that last slide. I thought the video was responding on the table. I was reading that it says final IEP report. I think I will expect that report in a year or two or three. Something that's written here. And my concern is slide 80. This question was asked again. If you go to slide 80 on the step framework, as legislators, when you say the Energy Act does not provide, so it means the Act by saying we both have voted, we have to go to the Act today. And if you go further say this is a key challenge, the way you are responding, it is to me as though it is not a key challenge. And I don't even know why you put it there if it is not. So that you remain comfortable. That you don't have to think. And if I take you to that important slide that you constantly go back to, that is slide 28, that one. I don't know that I'll have a better understanding when I go to my electronic. Otherwise I can't see that at all. When you call them to refer to this, that is slide 24. Slide 24, which again it should be a very important slide. From where I'm sitting, I don't see anything. Unless you could tell me now to go to your electronic and the Zoom, it makes you get better understanding. Thank you.
On one side, if you refer to slide 14, your 3Es, you make reference on the second E to economic growth. My interest is that where and how do you take on board social transformation issues? Shouldn't that be one of the pillars when you do the planning? Thank you. If there's no further question, I hand over to the chairman once again.
Chairperson, I will deal with the issues that were raised by Prof. And then the rest of my colleagues are going to help me out. On the issue that you have raised about the timing, which we have given ourselves, a period of about 4 months to conduct and 6 months to finalize. So we expect the IEP report, the final draft, to be completed by November next year. And then on the issue of the legislation, I was just telling my colleagues that you do have a point. We should not have said that it's a key change. We should not have done it. I agree with you. We do not need at this point in time to change legislation in the energy trade.
Thanks, Chairperson. The further follow-up questions and comments made by Honourable Member Freling have been noted, in the sense that the issue of externalities, we have actually mentioned that as a challenge before. But I think what I'm saying is that it's something that we are saying that it does need to be addressed. However, it is beyond just only the Department of Energy, and something that in the longer term we definitely want to work to addressing. But we obviously the draft report as it stands has not actually dealt with that issue largely, and mainly focuses on costs of quantities of emissions and also water usage on to a certain extent. So I'll allow Dr. Goins to also expand on that. On the issue of the nuclear build plan and whether it's been considered, or the cost rather, of the nuclear build plan, whether this has been considered in the IEP. A nuclear supply option has been actually considered. And if you have had a look at the report, you also see that in terms of the different policy options that we've actually evaluated, the model presents different outputs and timings of the different supply options. So in the cases, maybe without going into the details, but in the case where you are trying to achieve your emissions constraints, you can see as one of the supply options that actually can help the country in reducing those emission reduction targets. And on the issue of transformation, also rather social issues and how they're dealt with, as I indicated that the process seeks to not only look at the quantitative or knowledge-driven elements, but also looks at other input which will be obtained, which leads to a policy-adjusted plan. And I also mentioned that one of the lessons that we learned from the Brazilian examples is how they have used a quantitative measure, which is actually an index, which is used by the United Nations, of the Human Development Index, which actually allows you to be able to monitor the progress that you are making, not only in terms of economic development, but socio-economic standing of the country. And through that particular index, if we can apply a similar approach that they've used in the future, it will allow us to be able to quantify, you know, or to only take it from a policy adjustment point of view. So I think that is a mechanism within which you can actually put it as an index which you could continually monitor and factor into the IED process going forward. And Dr. Goins, if you could then just expand on that issue of the externalities, that's what you wanted to raise your hand on that one.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to talk about what you busy doing with environmental affairs, and they've got their national emissions inventory, which they've put together. And as part of that, we're looking to see how we can integrate with them and looking at the relationship between the emissions and energy. Of course, there are a couple more steps in that. You go from emissions to air quality and then from air quality to health. So we're not doing nothing, but there's a process we are involved in.
If I can address the question about the transformation aspect in this. Chair, we must not create the impression that it's not been addressed. In fact, our departmental vision is one of a transformed energy sector, if you go into our annual report and all that. And what we're saying is that much as this is a huge opportunity to transform the sectoral market structures, it is receiving attention not in itself. In other words, it is not, you won't see it in the plan as to how we deal with it, metal transformation, you know, directly. But I give some example here. We mentioned the issue around distributed generation, where we take energy into the rural corners of the country in order to create economic activity in a localized kind of way. This is not necessarily in the need to be kind of scale, but it would be, you know, based on, if you like, local energy sources like, you know, the local wind, solar, biomass, biogas, and so on. So that's the one element of transformation. There's another element that relates to transformation of the existing industry structure. So basically, it's new, but it's also the question around how do we pursue those objectives set in the charter and make sure that we do have skills developed, more people participating in the broader, you know, economy of the country and so on. So in fact, it goes further. I imagine one of the questions that we are going to have to face is how do we deal with the issue around gender mainstreaming in this context? You know, so there are those social elements. And what the last slide here indicates is that what we do ultimately, what informs the ultimate loop in relation to the IEP and so on, are these elements here. We make a recommendation in relation to the energy pathway, and then based on the socio-economic implications, we then, you know, refine the plan accordingly. What we haven't done justice to in this presentation is what does this mean in terms of the element there of the socio-economic implications, and this is where you'll find, you know, a little bit more detail around how we deal with the transformational agenda and so on. Just the question around, Janet, you phrased this, and I think my colleague has started with it, do we agree with the ERC model? And that what we're really saying here is that, so we have a national play here, and it's about getting South Africa around the table and saying, this is the assumption or a set of assumptions that we make in relation to demand, in relation to cost, in relation to possible futures, and so on, and let's engage at that level. What we are very, very around is that if we use different assumptions, and we don't even share those assumptions, we're very likely to come to different outcomes without realizing that actually our fact base, our starting point is different. So we would like to have everybody, we don't want people to do their own little plan on the side. We would rather like to have people engage us in the public consultation process on the basis of a transparent process where documents have been issued. The assumptions are there for everybody to scrutinize, and if the assumptions are not, you know, what should be, let's engage on that. Lastly on this is that we do not discriminate against any energy technology. So in other words, if there is an opportunity, like my colleague indicates, pursuant to our, you know, environmental objective, pursuant to our greenhouse gas emissions profile and nuclear features, so be it. We do not say we do not like nuclear and therefore let's find a way of, you know, working nuclear out, because there's an opportunity given this IEP, you know, to sterilize the nuclear option. The question, I think my colleague has dealt with the question about other departments having to assist us with that. And then, sorry, lastly, the costing model, what we indicated is that part of our policy option is to do a long-term tariff trajectory in energy, the electricity space, and based on all these considerations, we'll be able to understand the impacts, and then we'll be making decisions that will be listed in the method, including how do we deal with the actual implementation of the. Did touch on when the last IEP will be, and if I understood process, I think we're saying by March next year, the intention is that we would have completed the public engagement process by the end of this year, and then we'll take another few months to synthesize it and then produce the. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think it's beginning to dawn to me and that other as well as to the real character of the nature of the integrated energy plan. Of course, one cannot blame on our members, but it would just take one sitting to internalize it. You know, the more you go deep into it, the more you realize how intricate it can be. But it's obviously a very powerful tool that will help not for us to have more confidence in how to handle issues relating to energy and even product development and transformation in particular more confidently, but also to assure investors in particular that we're really serious, not just through rhetoric, about you know, our future and our transformation. But obviously, amongst other things, I trust and hope, you know, the society issue with reference to the energy white paper, that I don't say I've gone through it thoroughly, but it might be good to do so, that there's a good balance in it, particularly against the dangers of commodification of energy. Particularly when we open up and liberalize, because at the end of the day, history has shown what happens when we pander towards commodification of any service, particularly when it comes to the indigent. That I would like to really emphatically warn on. Definitely, you know, as we go along and handle our planning tools, you know, we definitely would look with eagerness as to how the IEP reciprocates and has symbiotic relations with your EBAPs and National Growth Path, NDP in particular. No, you've articulated, but I'm just emphasizing that thanks for that, because it's really putting us on our toes, to say. Surely, as we move along, I trust this tool will also show how enabling is our policy and legislative environment is, because also we're definitely very much alert to that, not just to take the tool and mold it without ensuring the enabling policy and legislative environment. Yes, you've touched the issue of data management, but can you take it as work in progress? Because on one side, you're saying you've internalized it. You don't have an EIA as it is done in the US, but you also see you have challenges inside. Now, once again, it triggers the experience in me where, you know, information or data that comes from outside the department would make you very, very much alert, maybe 1,000% alert, because you've got to ensure its integrity. Now, ensuring its integrity, it means you must have requisite, skilled personnel inside the department. We'll take that as a homework. We don't have to necessarily, you know, go at length on it as well at this stage in time. Honourable members, Honourable Hailing, is there something burning?
Okay.
It's just around the process. It's just because I wasn't quite sure in your response around the funding model for the UK. Will that be released to us at some point? What date will that come out and when will we get a copy of that? And then just secondly, the updating of the ILP, when will this now happen? Because you said you wanted to do the IP first. So if we can get timelines and all of that, it would be hugely helpful.
James, just through you, we're ready to, as we embark on this IEP consultation process, we have indicated on this on one of these slides the elements that go into it. If I can maybe just rehash, the IRP update forms part of this consultation process, so this will be done within the next few weeks, basically. What we have done is started a process on the liquid fuels roadmap, the 20-year liquid fuels roadmap, and we can engage on that as well. The gas part and gas infrastructure plan is not as advanced. We've only just started with that, if you like, the terms of reference and how this will entail. But we believe that towards the end of this year, we would be able to incorporate it into the consultation process and so forth. So there will be other elements here. The wire part, including the transmission aspect, in other words, that the IRP is going to become geographically defined as well in terms of the, or in respect of the generation options. So that is what we take him on the roadmap. What we on the road. And also, so the social element, the what we're doing is we want you to incorporate the universal access, the electrification process into this, so that it becomes a comprehensive, you know, engagement of virtually this slide here. So the primary energy sources and some of the options that we're looking at, liquid fuels, gas, electricity, and renewables. So it will be as comprehensive as possible in different phases. What we have not done as yet, we're still finalizing within the department, just what the consultation will entail. Very high level, for the purpose of this meeting, is that we would like to definitely on those three or four critical elements of the IEP, we will visit, we'll do a provincial stakeholder engagement. In some of the other provinces, we would accentuate, if you like, the social progress. So if we go, for example, to give an example, no disrespect to Rustenburg, for example, we might, you know, underscore some of the elements in the IEP more than others. You know, and so forth. So we will come with a program. It will probably be on our website as to how we want to engage, and then we'll be able to. Sorry, that was a long. I thought we would take the opportunity for us to hear to ask you to engage us on those consultations. And then there was the other question on the. Oh, sorry, on the. Okay. The long-term tariff trajectory is an electricity-wide issue. So in other words, it talks about the tariff implications of the integrated resource plan as updated based on certain assumptions and so on. It does not necessarily seek to isolate out one technology from the other. So it's not like you're going to see a nuclear, you know, funding and as such. What you will see is the IRP, what goes into the grid and what we think based on certain assumptions, how we discount and so on, what the trajectory is going to be, so as to define how the various technology interactions can then be funded. In fact, even the first IRP that was produced did indicate, you know, including nuclear, what the tariff trajectory could do. And where we had not really completed the loop was, for example, we had not then said, how do we make sure that it can be managed from an affordability, in other words, where tariffs do not necessarily jump, you know, in a manner that shocks the economy. So that is what we're promising that we'll be able to do by end of this year. And based on that, introduce, you know, and disaggregate the different technology options that are available, you know, for consideration.
Just
just as we are concluding, you owe us, yes, all of good news. As of Ingenji, we are scholars. Somebody told me, whispered to me, that there are good news from yesterday's workout. You still don't know?
No.
Yeah, please. Okay. Can you share with honorable member? I wish the media was here in full force. I know they'll get it from their own sources, but please share us. To us, your concluding remarks.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And members will recall that yesterday we were closing the window 3 for renewable energy independent power producer program. And members will recall that in our first window we got 28 days, and on our second window we got
28 out of?
No, what?
28 successful out of how many applications? Because I think the demand must always be highlighted.
Okay, it was 28 out of 52, and the second one was 47 out of about 70. So in other words, the bid that came in, the first one was 52, the next one was about 70, and yesterday we received about 93 bids. So what's been said then is that most leaders are beginning to be more and more confident on the processes that we follow, and also are beginning to be comfortable with the transparent process that we follow. So it is expected then that that's how we are going to be running our programs in the energy space.
And we haven't touched the additional 2,200. Isn't that a good cause for us to smile on the members? You see? I know I did a member statement, but as I was drafting it, I don't know that I phoned you. I was surprised that we've actually won 2 hours, a baby like South Africa in the renewable energy. And also in the G20, we move from number last to number 11.
Number nine.
You see? So if anyone was doubting, look.
I'm out of.
Out of 20, G20.
G20,
comrades, now. people here, honorable, now you think we can be 9 out of 9. Unfortunately for you, we are 9 out of 20 in a very short space of time. But I think it's a cause for us to smile and not necessarily celebrate in full, but to encourage others. And I hope also that also is a good time for a clarion call, even to take it a step further, particularly on localization. Because if people remember during the first energy stakeholders meeting that we held in November 2011, one of the things that the various inputs that was being said, where we're talking about job prospects on renewable energy in the manufacturing sector, was the issue of localization. No, there were different inputs. Some are saying that look, we need a certain level of demand in order for investors, you know, foreign direct investment to come in. You know, I remember there was even some calculation on the length for wind turbines that if you can produce so much, then, or if you can demand so much, then, investors can come and locally produce. But we're asking a couple of things about exporting some, about the regional context, and all of that. But to me, I don't think I have any of the figures and things there. That still needs some number crunching, but this is a good cause. Because midway, without even finishing the 3,725, the previous minister, with your support, had to make an addition of 3,200 megawatts, you know. And once again, this has been reinforced with this 93 bidders, you know. And we wish them well, and we wish the best to get successful. But obviously, coming to what I've done today, I think once again, honorable members, this is a very good indication as to when we apply our minds and be very developmental. We, having not even concluded this tool, we can see a little bit of light at the tunnel, if not more. Just one thing, the skill base, I hope as we move along, we are assuring. I admire Mkololo. She's very, very, she has become a professor now.
But I hope you adding to her team. I know Obi at times, you know, you ask Upu Obi is in DRC, Upu Obi overseas. So we don't even rely on him that much in this space. So I trust and hope the universities will come on board to give you any reinforcements on the skill base, because they are a very complex road. Somebody just told me there's what is called Progressive Professionals Forum, and I trust and hope they'll also be inspired to give whatever for this. And also the organizing society, from one angle or another, they do have the skills that would reinforce the department. And on that basis, honored members, I think we have done enough for today. Until we meet on the 10th, please, not next week. Let's just be careful, because there are changes now. You know, the big stuff is coming next year, so things are changing. We'll be meeting, but it will be confirmed. But Sanity will just be sharing with us its role as an energy efficiency champion. Thank you very much. The meeting. Okay. We can take a couple of minutes to release other people, because with members, we just need to look at the minutes and reports and address them. So, minutes in front of us. Can you quickly dispose with them? I think this was circulated some time ago, but felt take any chance. Let's just cut a few extra trees so that we can be able to get through them. Shall I start with the first set, which is 30th of January 2030. We all have copies. Okay. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3, page 4, okay, shall I get a move on the second now? On a lot of moves, on a fading second. Thank you. The only thing is just to highlight the fact that the department owes us a list of municipalities which do not have incident registers. They should have been done within within February, because we gave them a month, so if the secretary could just ensure another reminder. Let's go to the 1st of February. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, can we get a move on the second, please? Honorable Slow moves. Honorable Lotto, second.
Thank you. This is the one on the
end, man. Yes. Another ISMO as well. 19th February, here at Plain Street. Page 1, page 2, page 3,
Can we get a move on the second? Honorable Khatebe moves. Honorable Slao second. You, once again, if you look at the resolutions, what is the department to articulate precise reason for the delay of each and every bill? We have done it again today. All the calls for us to be a bit fair with the processing. Okay, we go to the 26th of February. Once again, the two items there, but let's look at page one, page two, only two pages. Comrade Brekhadeve moves, and seconded by Honorable Lord, thank you. I think we need to look at resolutions as well as to what have you resolved and what follow-ups are there, whether that has been done. An attachment.
Performance report. February 21. Examine the budget.
That has not been done. I take a call for that, but I'll look into it. The main thing, members resolve the committee must be updated on a quarterly basis regarding committee budget. I'm going to have a caucus. You see, even if it's on a later note, we need to ensure self-evaluation whilst we do oversight to others. Okay, shall we go to 27th February? February, page one, page two, page three. Page 4, page 5, any move at the second round of members? Honorable Lotto moves.
Honorable Frailing, second. Thank you very much.
So the restructuring of the other.
And once again, I think I'll just draw your attention to the fact that we did ask the department to consider another energy summit, given all these new developments. It might be a good thing just to remind them of that. All right, members, thank you very much for now. See you on the 10th. Thank you.